Today we start text 35 on page 58 of the Sri Brahma Samhita book. Ekopiso rachayitam jagaranda kotim yachaktirasti jagaranda chayat yadantak andantarasta paramana chiyantarastam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Translation: Govinda, or he, is an undifferentiated entity, as there is no distinction between potency and the possessor thereof. In his work of creation of millions of worlds, his potency remains inseparable. All the universes exist in him, and he is present in his fullness in every one of the atoms that are scattered throughout the universe at one and the same time. Such is the primal Lord whom I adore. So, this verse, the theme of this verse is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, that the Absolute Truth, Sri Krishna, is simultaneously one with and different from everything else. Those that are familiar with Prabhupada's preaching will recognize the third line of this verse that Prabhupada quoted time and time again, andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. So many times when Prabhupada was preaching about the scientists, their idea of creation, that all everything comes from Big Bang theory, or life comes from matter and it's all unconscious and just material, and he would always quote this line, andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam, that Krishna is situated everywhere. That he's standing or situated inside of everything. Paramanu means even inside the atom. Chayantarastam. So this is a very favorite line for Prabhupada's preaching, to describe how Krishna, God, is actually everywhere in every single atom. And that's why atoms are moving, and electrons and protons, and that's why planets are moving, and that's why we're moving. Because when the super soul leaves our body, we don't move anymore. We're not here either, but we're eternally related, the soul and the super soul. So all movement comes from God. The Prabhupada's purport. This 32, 3, 4, and 5, these verses of the Brahma Samhita, they explain the supreme position of Krishna. So this one explains how Krishna's potencies are non-different. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Purport, page 59. Krishna is the highest of all entities. In him is an entity which is termed chit, spiritual, which is distinct from the principle of limitation. So the second way to say that is, clearly distinct from the material conception, there is the superior element of chit, or transcendence, present within Krishna. By his inconceivable power, he can at will create numberless universes. All the mundane universes owe their origin to the transformation of his external potency. In other words, the entire world is a transformation of his potency. Again, his abode is beyond human conception, since all worlds, limited and spiritual, exist in him, and he resides simultaneously in his fullness and entirety in all the atoms in all the worlds. All pervasiveness is only a localized aspect of the majesty of Krishna, the Lord of all. So this can be said that another way. And Krishna's abode is beyond the jurisdiction of this world. All worlds, both both spiritual and material, are situated within him. At the same time, he is in his full form. He, in his full form, is situated within, not only in every universe, but within every atom of every universe. In other words, his full form is there. His Paramatma feature is there in every single atom. Forearm form of Chaturbhuja Narayan. And then he's also located on Narayan Lok, Vishnu Lok. He's in every, that's what this verse is all about. That he's situated in every single atom, and he's also situated outside in his own planet. And he also comes before us and reveals himself to us, as he revealed himself to Dhruva Maharaj or Narada Muni at least one time, Bilva Mangala Thakur, and other devotees in various shapes and forms. So he can present himself at any place, at any time, according to his sweet will. And the rest of the purport. Though he is all-pervasive, yet in his existence everywhere in a medium shape consists his spiritual lordship beyond human conception. This argument favors the doctrine of simultaneous, inconceivable distinction and non-distinction, and knocks down the contaminating Mayavad and other allied doctrines. So this can also be said. When it says here in this sentence, medium shape, it means human-like, human form, medium shape. In other words, he appears when he was, Prabhupada was once asked Krishna's height, and Prabhupada said he's a little less than 2 meters, about 5'11". But when we read in the Mahabharata, they say that Arjuna was 12 feet tall or something like that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was 7 feet tall, so that's 2 meters plus. But the Kshatriyas and the giants of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, they were quite robust. And I even read one translation of Mahabharata that said that Arjuna was 15 feet tall. That's about almost a little shorter than this room. This room is, well, how tall is this room? This room is less than 15? The door is 6 or 7. It's about 11 feet, this room. You know, because the door must be 6 plus. So Arjuna was quite a towering figure. But when Brahma, or excuse me, when Jiva Goswami writes in the purport that Krishna exists everywhere in a medium shape, it means he's actually human form. So this last paragraph can be rephrased like this. Although Krishna is all-pervading, he nonetheless exists always and everywhere in his full-fledged form of the most charming features in medium, human-like proportions. By this consideration, the full-fledged theistic axiom of simultaneous, inconceivable oneness and difference is favored, and the contaminating idea of the Mayavad and other impersonal philosophies is disproved. So the idea is that Krishna is all-pervading, he's in every atom, and he's on every planet, and he's everywhere throughout the universe. But that makes it a little bit hard to grab or relate to. It's very hard to relate to someone that's everywhere, and within everything, and outside of everything. It's a little bit too mind-boggling. So therefore, Krishna avails himself in a very charming personal form, and that's why it's explained that he's medium-sized. You know, he's just like Arjuna when he was on the battle of Kurukshetra and he saw the universal form. He was astonished and he was overwhelmed. He was like, well, you know, where do I, you know, like how do I relate to, you know, all these thousands of arms and thousands of faces. I don't know which face to look at. Or, you know, when you're talking to someone, if they only have one face, it's easy to relate to them. But all of a sudden they like sprout like 10 heads or something like Ravana. Of course, that was only on battle he had 10 heads. When he was with his queens, he had one head. But if you're talking to someone and all of a sudden they have 20 heads, it's like, well, are you listening to me? Or you know, because 19 heads may be looking the other way or something. And, you know, it's a little hard to relate to. So then Krishna adopts a medium shape. He adopts a one-on-one, a relatable form, a user, ergonomic form, or user-friendly form that we can see and feel and touch, and we can embrace them, just like Gopakumar. When Gopakumar of Brihad Bhagavatamrita finally attained his beloved Lord, Govinda in the spiritual world, and when he finally got there, he wanted to run to embrace him. Just like when he was in Vaikuntha, at one time he had attained Vaikuntha. And in Vaikuntha, he saw the Lord of Vaikuntha, Lord Narayan, sitting on his throne with Lakshmi and Jayanvijaya, it was Sunanda and Nanda. Different servants were fanning him. And when he saw this beautiful blue Lord with his golden yellow dhoti and lotus eyes, he was thinking, oh, this is my Gopal, this is my Govinda. So he said, I want to embrace him. So he ran to embrace his Lord in a friendly, coward boy way. Because he related to the Lord as a coward boy. And coward boys, they wrestle together, they embrace, we're equals, we embrace each other. So he runs up to embrace Narayan, and the guards put their swords down, hey, where do you think you're going? Stop. Well, no, he's my Lord. I want to give him a hug. I want to give him a big hug and embrace. They say, you nonsense. And then after he was there for a short time, he was feeling kind of like he was in Vrindavan, so he started, wearing a turban, and he wore like a, what's that, cummerbund. He tucked up his dhoti like a coward boy and wore a cummerbund, and he put some dirt on his face and a couple of peacock feathers in his hair, and he went to see Lord Narayan. It was, wait a minute. This is not ISKCON dress code. You can't dress like this around here, no shirt and jeans and stuff. You got to wear dhoti, kurta, And he said, this is my Kunta, man. Where's your gold ornaments? Where's your necklaces? And he said, well, come on, I'm a coward boy. Don't be so uptight about? And they said, and then they went and complained to Lord Narayan. This is Brihad Bhagavad Samrita. I said, this newcomer guy, he's off the wall. He's like he's trying to break the tradition. He's like some, mod dresser or something. We have to, you have to train him up, So then they spoke to him. They said, look, you can't go parading around here like that with, like mini skirts and stuff, with this kind of mini dhotis and coward dhotis. So then he started thinking, hey, this place is not cool. I don't like this place. So many rules and regulations. There's too much vidhi around here. It's all a bunch of vidhi and stuff. Because that's where you go if you're attached to vidhi bhakti and rules and regulations. You go to Vaikuntha, and you get to follow the dress code and be in school on time and be everywhere on time. So the point is that Krishna, he reveals himself in a very sweet and beautiful form, which we can relate to. But like sometimes it's told. Because when they're describing Krishna's lila tattva and lila vichar and tattva vichar, they often cite his lilas or his pastimes to illustrate his various aishvarya, his potencies, and his omnipotency. So sometimes they say that Vrindavan has the greatest aishvarya, and different acharyas, they cite examples. Just see, when Krishna danced in the rasa dance, there were 16,000 gopis, and he expanded himself to be with one gopi. To be with one, Krishna gopi, Krishna gopi, Krishna gopi. You see the paintings on the wall, Krishna gopi, Krishna gopi. So this shows, this is his Prakash, Vaibhav Prakash, that he's manifesting so many equal forms of himself. They're all Krishna, they're all looking like Krishna, smelling like Krishna, tasting like Krishna, performing like Krishna. So some acharyas, like Sridhar Swami and others, when they comment on Rasalila, they show that, see how Krishna, sometimes he would show, and even when he would sit with the coward boys, he would expand so many forms so they could all exchange with him and give their prasadam. But that's exactly what you're doing every time you make an offering. You're making an offering, and in your meditation, you're calling your Ishtadev down, Gopal or Mahaprabhu, Gaur Nitai or Radhasham or Giridhari, whomever. They're there and you're calling them, please, you come and you please accept this offering. And then they're coming and expanding before you. And then we told that passage time about the Brahmin who cooked three times in Jagannath Mishra's house in Chaitanya Bhagavat. We told that before. And so he finally realized that this was my Lord of my life, Balagopal. So he was coming and eating. He was calling and meditating on Balagopal, please come and take this offering. So Nimai was coming and stealing it and eating it. So we're doing the same thing. We're calling. So Krishna expands himself into each heart. Every time you make an offering, Krishna comes there into millions of homes and millions of places and accepts their offerings. However, although this may show an Aishwarya aspect of Krishna, other acharyas like Vishwanathan say, no, this is not true. If you impose this conception on Braj Leela, then the sweet Madhurya leaks out the bottom. You know, it's like you got an Indian pot or something with a hole, an Indian tiffin with a hole in the bottom. You know, it just leaks, it leaks. It does, it's not waterproof. So if you impose this Aishwarya, although it's an opulence, it's an Aishwarya, it's a majesty and power of God, and Krishna shows that he's not only a little coward boy, Vamshidhara or Murlidhara or Mukundchor, but he's, you know, God omnipotent, who expands himself into millions of forms. In Padma Puran, he explains in the Maharas dance, which is the next Purnima, which is 2 weeks from Saturday. Saturday's Amavasya, and 2 weeks later is Maharas. So in that Maharas, it explains in Padma Puran, because it also describes Krishna's Leela there and mentions Radharani's name, and it's quite explicit in terms of mentioning names of Sakis and Gopis, where Shukadeva is a little bit more hidden. He doesn't mention Radharani's name. But Padma Puran does, and in that discussion it says that there was 2 billion Gopis in the Rasa dance. That means Krishna expanded into 2 billion forms, if you take Sridhar Swami's comments as being, you know, the idea. And certainly they're correct. And that can't be, you know, we can't disagree. But Vishwanath and others explain, no, this will dilute, or this will corrupt the sweetness of Krishna's Braj Leela, his Prema Madhurya, and his Venu Madhurya. This Prema and this sweet form. Actually, what happened was this, and this is what Prabhupada writes in his Krishna book. He said there was one Krishna. There was one Krishna in the Rasa dance. And he danced so fast that it appeared that he was one Krishna with each gopi, because he was like, phew, 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 phew. He was like, zip, 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 and everyone, oh, he's with me! And then and then Krishna would be before them for like a second, or, you know, whatever, because time is his servant. And Yoga Maya is his, you know, auxiliary agent, his servant. So the gopi's, oh, he's with me! And then she's like relishing that ecstasy, and then he's with her and gone, and he's actually already left, but she's thinking that he's still there because of the ecstasy that she's feeling. And he dances with this one. And the analogy Prabhupada gave is just like when you take, just like you take an incense stick, and you light the incense stick, and you twirl it around like this. You know, you turn it in a circle at night when it's lit and it's red, and it's called a firebrand. Prabhupada used the word, it's like when you turn a firebrand. A firebrand is kind of an old, you know, old English term or something. When you have wooden fire, you have fireplaces like they did in the old days, and you have these different kinds. Then you do dots, then you do a line. First you make the eyebrows on Giridhara or Shamsundar Radharani, you do gopi dots. One, you do it the outline with a dot, 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 then you connect the dots, and pretty soon a line of dots becomes beautiful eyebrows of Giridhara. So it becomes one. So that one point, it's one point, it's a red point of incense. But if I go like this, and like this, and like this, what does it look like to you? A circle of red. A fire brand. So they explained that's what was happening in the Rasa dance. Krishna's going in a circle, but he's going so fast it was like one Krishna. Just like this is only one, it's only one point, but it's only one red point on the end of this incense. But because I'm going so fast, it looks like a continuous circle of red. You understand? So Krishna was one Krishna, but he was going so fast it looked like a whole circle of blue. A blue circle. And intermixed in that blue circle were little golden jewels. Little golden jewels known as the gopis. So that's what they say to explain how Krishna doesn't, you know, it's just one Krishna there in the Rasa dance. But this, of course, that's another opulence that he shows such incredible speed. He's an incredible dancer. So, that's clear. Anyone has any questions about that? So, yeah. Yeah, they say, because Prabhupada was asked that question about, because in the second canto it says that Krishna appears about the size of a thumb. And Prabhupada says that it's the thumb size according to the thumb of the living entity. Like an elephant's thumb is bigger than ours. So Krishna appears in a bigger form. But the point is that his form, that localized form, is personal. You know, he may be appearing very, very small, Actually, you know, I don't know. He just, when he has asked that question about this, the size of a thumb, because, you know, the soul is like inconceivably invisible. You can't see the soul, the microscope. If God is as big as a thumb and the soul is right next to him, then you can see him with a, easily see God in the heart. But every time people do heart surgery, they never saw a little guy standing in there. Just like when Prabhupada was a little boy, he thought when there was some music coming from the radio, and he was a little boy, he thought there was some man inside his radio singing. You know, he thought there was a little guy in there. So Prabhupada started, he was going to take the radio apart, you know, break it apart and try to find the little man inside the radio. And then Prabhupada's father said, wait a minute, that's not like that. It's just an illusion, that it's just a voice, and try to explain all that to a kid, which is pretty inconceivable in itself. So it's not like you open up the heart cavity and you're going to find a little Krishna dancing around in there, a little Paramak, little Vishnu. But Prabhupada just said that the super soul, the size of the super soul is related to the size of the body that the jiva is inhabiting. But that's one point he answered in relation to that question. So a bigger body has a bigger super soul, but ultimately the super souls are all, you know, completely, you know, 1/10,000th the tip of a hair, right? Because that verse is there in the Puranas. It says, how big is a soul? He said, we take one of your hairs and divide it into 10,000 parts. That's how big it is. So that means it's like, you know, inconceivably, infinitesimally small. And God is the same size. I think the point that's being made here is to keep in mind is that although Krishna is within every atom, he can manifest himself in a suitable, personal, human-like form, which you can relate to, and which you can love and serve. It's basically language. To try to describe reality in language, it always falls short. Even in our different languages, like when they try to describe ras, or the different rasas of Krishna, you can't really describe in English language, because there aren't sufficient, we have like one word, love or something, emotion. But Sanskrit is much more elaborate for describing reality. Now when you go into transcendence and spiritual reality, language really falls short. To describe something that's indescribable, or to measure something that's immeasurable. So that's what they're trying to do there, and the Puranas are trying to give us some vague idea. Well, this is some idea about the soul, that he's this small. So it's not that eventually some Japanese scientist will invent the microscope that will see the particle of hair smaller than 10,000 parts, you know, like a micron of a millimicron of a billionth of a micron of a, you know. In other words, then the sages will write a new book and say he's 100,000th the tip of a hair. So, you know, the whole idea is that he's inconceivably tiny and imperceptible. And that's why majority of the people of the world, they don't believe it. There's no such thing as soul. That's bogus. It's just a material energy, and it's just, you know, life is just a series of different ecosystems and whatever they explain. Because they can't see it, and they can't perceive it, and they can't measure it with their ordinary instrumentation. It escapes them, it's beyond them, so they reject it. So that's just to give, people that are kind of in the middle of the road, you could say that people have faith, innocent people have faith in God when they read Shastras, because faithless atheists, they don't even accept Shastras at all. But someone that may accept Shastras as being somewhat believable and somewhat true, they'll read a statement like that and they'll say, okay, that gives some idea. I was wondering how big the soul was, and here it says 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. That's something everybody kind of learns within the first month of ISKCON or something. It's one of those facts that sticks in your mind. That incredibly small size. So the faithful person will say, yeah, I guess that gives some idea. It's there, but it's really, really small. It's not a Giriraj. Giriraj had his birthday today. His 10th birthday, the day that he came to me, his Avirbhav Tithi was today. So some devotees cooked for him and they made 57 preparations. Chapan Bhog. So it's getting a little dry inside there.
Bhogiraj, Dharan the key.
So this is the last of four verses glorifying the supreme position of Krishna. Krishna's devotees are non-different. Even though Krishna is completely spiritual, he is able to create and maintain the material world. And the analogy that was used, just like an electrician, he uses, you know, he has one power, one energy, electricity, but he can do opposite things. He can cool the house or heat the house. So Krishna has one energy, it's spiritual, but he's completely chit potency. But if he covers his chit potency with a little bit of avidya shakti, then he creates this material world, which is far away from him, far distant from him. He creates it by a distant expansion, by a far removed avatar of himself, a Purusha avatar, Mahavishnu. So there's some notes here that explain how Jiva Goswami and Bhakti Sandarva, he says that this Achintya Beta Beta Tattva is kind of displayed in the Damodar Leela in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 9, verse 13 and 14. Mother Yashoda bound Krishna with a rope, yet all the universes are contained within him, which this verse says, Adantarastha Paramanu Chiantarastham. That he's in every atom, but everything is situated in him. So how is it that every universe is inside the belly of Damodar, but yet Mother Yashoda is able to tie a rope around him? So Mother Yashoda appreciated the localized placement of her child, yet she saw within his mouth everything. So she ultimately tied the Lord with love and devotion. The Acharyas explain that there are particular sections of the Bhagavatam that are very, very important for us to know and understand in order to progress properly in bhakti and develop the right understanding and determination. I discussed this before in relation to Lord Chaitanya's Leela in Puri, how he was repeatedly for 18 years, he was hearing the teachings of Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, 4th canto and 8th canto. But also this section of Damodar Leela is also very important because it shows this the inconceivable nature of the Lord. This is a Achintya Beta Beta concept. So I have some of that part of the Bhagavatam is here. As this verse this particular verse of the Bhagavatam illustrate this verse 35 in Rama Samhita. 10th canto, chapter 9, verse 13 and 14. It even sounds similar. Na chantar na bahir yasya, na purvam na pichaparam, purva param bahishchantar, jagato yat jagachchaya. Tam matvatmajam avyaktam, martyalingam arhokshajam, gopikul kulukule damna, Banda Prakritam Yata. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no beginning and end, no exterior and no interior, no front or rear. In other words, he's all-pervading. Because he's not under the influence of the element of time, for him there is no difference between past, present, and future. He exists in his own transcendental forms at all times. Being absolute, beyond relativity, he is free from distinctions between cause and effect, although he is the cause and effect of everything. That unmanifested person who is beyond the perception of the senses had now appeared as a human child, and Mother Yashoda, considering him her own child, bound him to the wooden mortar with a rope. She tied him up. Now, Jiva Goswami very analytically describes this these two verses in Bhagavad Sandarbha. The Bhagavad Sandarbha is a very important scripture to read, all the Sandarvas of Jiva Goswami. Kushagra has translated most of them in English. Because he analyzes the Bhagavatam from a very critical viewpoint. He takes key verses of the Bhagavatam which are explaining and defining different aspects of Krishna, of his different powers and potencies and abilities. And then he challenges those. He plays what we call a devil advocate. He says, well, someone may say that this verse says that. And then he takes that argument and then he defeats that. So what he does is he really solidifies one's understanding of these different philosophical points about Krishna's identity, his power, his beauty, his abilities. And this is an example in this verse. Because for us it's just a bunch of Sanskrit words with a translation which we understand to some extent. So now he takes, as is the standard, he takes different phrases from the verse and analyzes them. So the first one is Jagato Yat Jagachaya. It means he, Krishna, is everything in creation in total. So this may be understood in this way. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not different from either the cause of creation or the cosmic manifestation that is an effect of that cause. In other words, he is the cause and he is the effect. And so they're equal. In other words, the entire material universe is nothing but the potency of the Supreme Lord. He is not different from it. Because an ordinary material rope is simply a fragmental part of one of his energies, such a rope has no power to bind him, any more than a small flame has the power to burn up a large fire. Right? A little tiny ghee lamp, it can't burn up a fire. At this point, someone may raise the following objection. If the Supreme Personality of God, it is all-pervading, then how is it possible that Yashoda Devi tied him with a small rope that could not even have extended the breadth of the material universe? In other words, this material universe has a certain... you can measure this material universe, and it's measured in the Bhagavatam. It's so wide and so vast. It's very big. But Krishna, he's all-pervading. He's inside, outside, he's up, down, everywhere. He's in and outside. So he's inside of things and outside. So how can you tie him up? You know, and he says, because Krishna's all-pervading, then even if you had enough rope to tie up the whole universe, still that's not enough because Krishna's beyond the size of the whole universe because he's all-pervading. But Mother Yashoda, just with a few ropes she collected here and there in Gokul, she was able to bind him up. The objection is answered in this verse by the word Martyalingam, which means, in order to perform his pastimes, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared like an ordinary human child. In order to act, I guess that's Martyalokam, means that he appeared like an ordinary human. In order to act like an ordinary human being, the Supreme Lord allowed himself to be bound by Mother Yashoda's rope. At this point, someone may raise the following question. Has anybody raised that objection? Or did anybody raise this question? Here's the question you may ask. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead has a human-like form, then that form is certainly manifested within a limited area of space. How can such a limited form be all-pervading? The question is answered in this verse by the word adhoksajam, which means beyond the perception of the senses. The form of the Personality of Godhead cannot be properly understood by the senses of the conditioned soul, nor can it be understood by any other process for acquiring knowledge available to the conditioned souls. Because he is thus achintya, inconceivable, although he may appear to be limited within time and space, just like he was here in the battlefield and people saw him. And most of the people that saw Krishna during his pastimes on earth 5,000 years ago, they thought he was just some small timer. They thought he was just a small time prince from Dwarka or king from Dwarka. It's explained that only 200 people knew that he was God, understood that he was the Supreme Lord. Most people thought he was just some other king. Pondraka was so foolhardy and foolish, he thought that, what is this? You know, he's just like us. Yes, he's stuck on two arms or something. He got some super glue and stuck two extra arms on himself. He's walking around with these four arms in Dwarka. I can do the same thing. I can just cut out some cardboard and paint it blue and, you know, stick on two more arms. I'll go down there. I'll challenge this rascal. This imposter's parading around like he's God or something, a Chaturbhuj Narayan. He's just some ordinary guy down there in Dwarka. I'm going to tear him to pieces. So he went down there. He said, come on out here and fight you. You know, like a Kshatriya. He challenged them. Then, of course, Krishna, you know, got a good laugh first, and then he finished them off. So he appears to, that we see him, but he's a Hoksajam. And Hoksajam means beyond the actual, his real form is beyond perception. We don't actually understand. We think, oh, he's just like, he's another man like me, or he's another king. And all, so that when Mother Yashoda looked, she saw this little boy, and he was naughty, mischievous, and misbehaved. So then she tied him up. But that little boy, although to her vision, or to other people's vision, just some human little child, small size, but the whole universe is within him. But this is beyond the perception of our senses to see. The influence of Yoga Maya on the Parishads or the associates of Krishna makes it so they just see that he's my little Krishna. He's my little son or my friend or my boyfriend. So this is how this question is answered, because the question is, if the Supreme Lord has a human-like form, then that form must be, you know, manifested in the limited area of space. In other words, that if he has a human-like form, that means his form is just made within this little, you know, of material energy and in a sphere that's limited by time and space. So then he can't be all-pervading. So then Jiva Goswami says, no, and the verse is that he's a Hoksajam. That he's beyond your perception to actually understand or to see that what form you're looking at. What you see is not what he really is. You're seeing him localized, but actually that little form, that Krishna that you're seeing localized, he's still all-pervading and everywhere. At this point, someone may ask, if the Supreme Personality of God it is all-pervading, even though his form appeared like that of an ordinary human being, then why did he not reveal his all-pervading nature to Mother Yashoda Devi? To his mother, Yashoda Devi. The question is answered in the verse with the words, Atmajam Matva. That his Matva, Atmajam, she thought Mother Yashoda considered Krishna her ordinary child. The relationship between Krishna and Yashoda was that of son and mother. In order to not disrupt the blissful exchange of love between himself and his mother, Lord Krishna concealed his all-pervasiveness and his other opulences from her eyes. Mother Yashoda's ignorance of the superhuman prowess of her son was actually her great glory. For in order to keep the loving parent-child relationship with her, Krishna allowed himself to be bound by a few small ropes. So this verse is, Jiva Goswami cites to support this verse by Brahma about this Achintya Bheda's inconceivable nature of the Lord, how he's just localized, but he's within everything and everything's within him. So actually Damodar Leela, Acharya's explained, it's very, very important to understand Damodar Leela. And it was deeply meditated upon in all ages by different sages. Satyabrata Muni, who lived in, I believe it was Satyuga. I forget, it's in Bhagavatam. It's not clear sometimes what yuga we're talking about. But I believe Satyabrata Muni was in Satyuga. And where people lived long, long time ago. But he had heard the Puranic literature and the ancient, you know, stories. So he knew about Krishna, so he sang and he wrote a prayer. Namamishvaram Satchiranandarupam Vasat Kundalam Gokule Vrajamanam Yashodabiyo Yukaladvavamanam Paramristam Atyantanto Drutagopya. Just to get you in the mood of, you know, like they say, spring is coming or something, you know, the summer is coming, the winter is coming, so Kartik is coming. And it's when we worship Damodar and Radha Damodar and Radharani. Kartik is Radharani's month. So we sing this song, as Satyavrata sang, and this song has the same words in it that are in this verse from the 10th canto, chapter 9, verse 13 and 14, which we're discussing here with Jiva Goswami's commentary. Ulakul. Ulakul means the grinding mortar which Krishna was tied to with the rope. So how is this little boy tied up to, you know, who's all-pervading, the source of all universe, and how is he tied up a little rope around the grinding mortar? So in this first verse of the Satyavrata Damodarastakam, he also talks of Ulukad, that Mother Yashoda tied him to the grinding mortar, and then, you know, for being bad. And so this prayer, which is about Damodar Leela and the Bhagavat Puran and other Skanda and Padma Puran to discuss it, and so many commentaries are there, it's very important for us to study and know this Leela, the philosophical significance of it, the sweetness of the rasa exchange, and how Krishna is ultimately bound by love. That's the ultimate conclusion. The only thing that Krishna can be, he's tied by the bound of love. So Mother Yashoda, she tied him with her love. So, any questions on this verse? Because I'll go to verse 36 now. It's funny how you forget the things you don't like. Right? You forget things you don't like. You remember eating because you like to eat. But you forget japa because you don't like to japa. Did I shout my rounds? I don't know. I can't remember. I think I did. Yeah, I must have. You know, but there's no question about did I eat or not. No, I didn't eat. I know when I ate and I know when I didn't eat. But when I chanted or didn't chant, didn't I chant today or was that yesterday? Ah, must have been today. Yeah, anyway. So we forget the things that, you know, that we don't like, but we remember things. So actually, I was speaking yesterday in verse 34, which I'm talking about Anyavilasita Shunyam, Jnana Karmadhyanamritam. Is that right? So I explained, as Vishnu Chakravartipat mentions in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Bindu, that there's three kinds of knowledge. Two of them are important for us, and they're favorable for Krishna consciousness. That first category is knowledge of the identity of Krishna, the constitutional identity of Krishna, which I enumerated in seven different categories. And Satchinananda Vigraha, Satchinananda Maya Vigraha, and all these different things are there. You know, he's Rasaraj, Rasa and Rasika, and Rasaraj, Emporium of Rasa. Remember all those things? So then we explain the second category of knowledge we have to know is the constitutional identity of the jiva, the identity of the jiva, and also the relationship between the jiva and Krishna. And the third kind of knowledge is the nirvishesh jnana, and that's what the verse is mentioning. This type of jnana is pratikul to bhakti, it's against bhakti, which is knowledge is knowledge where you develop knowledge of the oneness of God and how you're one with God and you're God and I'm God and you merge into God. So that's what verse 34 is talking about, this third category of knowledge that the yogis try to attain. Pantastukoti shatavatsara sambhragamyo vayora tapi manaso munipungavanam. So they try to attain the jnanis. But jnanis and yogis, the jnanis who try to find out the non-differentiated Brahman, right? So the jnanis, they study and they employ the process of neti neti. They understand and study reality. God, Brahman is not this, Brahman is not that, this is not Brahman, that's not Brahman. Brahman is this. It's the ultimate oneness underlying the variety. And let us annihilate our individuality and our variety and oneness and separateness and merge with that oneness. So, I had some discussion on that. I just read a little bit from my notes. This is the third category of knowledge, which is, although the other are favorable, the other two are very favorable for Krishna Bhakti, and we explain how they're actually essential to begin and practice devotional service in a strong way. We should have these two types of knowledge. But this third type of knowledge is opposed to bhakti and is not really required. It's called Jiva Brahma Aikya Gyan. Jiva Brahma Aikya Gyan, the knowledge by which one by which one becomes one with Brahma, by which the jiva becomes aikya, like ek do teen, aikya becomes one with the Brahman effulgence. Jiva Brahma Aikya Gyan. It's also called Nirvishesh Gyan. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachadi Shatarani. Tarane means means liberating. So Krishna, Prabhupada is freeing us from this type of gyan. He's freeing us from this entanglement and this annihilation, the suicide of merging into the Brahman effulgence. It's considered a type of atmahata, annihilation of the self. So this is knowledge opposed to bhakti, where one, the meaning of this is there's no difference between the jiva and Brahma. When ignorance is dissipated or destroyed, the jiva becomes identical or one with Brahma. At that time, the jiva has no separate existence. It's all one. This verse in Brahma Samhita text 34 explains that gyan refers only to this type of gyan, knowledge of oneness of the jiva and Brahma. It's also called nirvishesh gyan, which means knowledge of the non-distinction. In other words, we're not one and different, we're just one, not different. Or impersonalism. Nirvishesh Gyan is opposed to bhakti. Other types of knowledge, which I already explained, they're essential when entering the path. In Brahma Aikya Gyan or Nirvishesh Gyan, there is no chance that the jiva's natural relationship with the Supreme Lord as servant and the served could ever arise. The attitude of servant and the served, which we mentioned yesterday, Savior, Sevaka Bhav, is the very life of bhakti. So what is the very life of bhakti? Like you're a devotee. Well, let's say we are aspiring to become devotees of Krishna, pure devotees of Krishna. There's no such thing as impure devotee. The goal, the reality, there's pure devotee and then those that are trying to become pure devotees. Because devotion ultimately is Shuddha Bhakti. That's what Krishna accepts. And that's what Krishna relishes. So if you're either a pure devotee or you're trying. So we're trying to become pure devotees, right? We're Jnana Mishra Bhaktis, Karma Mishra Bhaktis, Gyan Mishra, Yoga Mishra Bhaktis, different kind of mixtures are there. So what is the very life of bhakti? The life of bhakti is the attitude of a servant. I am Krishna's servant. Daso smi. Sounds very simple. Oh yeah, that's easy. But actually it's the most difficult thing to realize that I am Krishna's servant and the servant of Krishna's servants and the servant of the servant of the servant. Lord Chaitanya, he gave that verse, Gopi Bhartu Padakamali or Dasan or Dasan or Das. So that is the identity of the jiva. So that's 34. I'm 35. Yes. Yeah, it's chit shakti, but then he has. In other words, it's one, but it's different. It's non-differentiated, but then he differentiates it for his various pastimes and for various uses. Just like one time in discussions with Bhakti Swarup Damodar, they're probably saying ultimately there's no material energy. Ultimately there's no material energy, there's only spiritual energy, there's only consciousness everywhere. Only consciousness everywhere, because Krishna is everywhere and he's super consciousness. Krishna is chit shakti, he's not maya, he's not ignorance, he's not avidya and karma. But those activities go on within his creation. There is ignorance, there is hard work and karma. It goes on, but that's like in a separation or in a when one covers Krishna's spiritual energy with a type of forgetfulness or a type of anti-ego, anti-mood of serving Krishna. So ultimately, there's only one energy. It's called chit shakti. Chit shakti means spiritual energy. But then it reflects itself and manifests in different ways. Just like ultimately, there's only one gopi, Srimati Radharani. All the other gopis are simply expansions of her. They're expansions. They're all representing different aspects of her moods. Her moods and bhavas of wanting to serve Krishna. Lita Sakhi, Vishaka, Chandravali, all of them. They're all actually one. So there's one gopi, Radharani, and then there's ultimately one absolute truth, Krishna, but then he becomes Krishna and Radha. Of course, that's eternally existing. So the energy is ultimately only spiritual. Avidya is pure spiritual knowledge covered with forgetfulness or ignorance. In other words, this one who, like for example, a self-realized soul. Why is he explaining that? Yomam pashyati sarvacha sarvam chame pashyati. In the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse 30. There's that verse. How's it go? 6:30. You have Bhagavad Gita. Yamam pashi sarvacha sarvam chame pashiti sasiham nam pranashyati nachame na pranashyami. Something like that. And can I see that? I think I got it basically. By the Lord's grace. Yamam pashiti sarvatra sarvam chame pashiti sasiham na pranashyami sachame na pranashyati. So this verse describes Gopi Bhav. So Gopi Bhav is in the Bhagavad Gita. And this is described by many acharyas as a verse that illustrates Gopi Bhav. Because no one can have this type of vision without having the exalted prema that's displayed in the hearts of the Braja Gopis. So this type of prema is a type of prema that was exhibited during the Rasa Panchadaya, the five chapters of the Rasa Dance, when the Gopis were leaving their bodies in the madness of separation from Krishna and madly searching for him on the banks of the Yamuna within every kunj and nikunj along those banks, and they were talking to the trees, and they were talking to the moon, and to the deer, and to the birds, and to the earth, and to each other, and imitating and seeing the one gopi had become Krishna, one had become Putana. So that verse is there, Yamam Pashyati Sarvatra Sarvam Chaimayi Pashyati Sasiham Na Pranashyati Sachemayinam Pranashyati. So it says, for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. So that's the gopis. They were seeing him everywhere and everything, and the creepers and the trees. And then they saw Krishna and each other, and then one gopi became Krishna and stood on the shoulders of another and said, hey, you rascal Kaliya, get out from here. And they actually became Taratmika. They actually thought fully, they saw Krishna so much everywhere, they became Krishna and identified with him. So this verse explains that for one who's in pure consciousness, he sees Krishna everywhere, and he doesn't see anything material. So for him, Prabhupada says for the Mahabhagavat, for the self-realized soul, the whole material world becomes a spiritual world. A sand dune becomes Govardhan Hill. A garden becomes Nikunja the Vrindavan. An ocean becomes Yamuna. And that was displayed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Puri Leela. He saw the whole material world as a spiritual world. He saw Vrindavan everywhere. So in pure consciousness, there's no more matter anymore. There's no more material energy, there's no more matter, everything is spiritual. So that means, ultimately everything is spiritual, everything is consciousness, because Krishna is everywhere. But the energies change their presentation according to the will of the Lord for different purposes. But ultimately it's His one energy. Then he cuts it up and divides it according to His will, to engage in different leelas or pastimes. And creation is a pastime. Srishti leela. So we'll meet again on Monday.